Welcome to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Jay Thomas. Jill is in the studio with me. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
Awesome. And we got Rick, who is joining us by phone today. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
Where are you coming to, or coming to us from?
From Kelowna.
From Kelowna. If you're waking up in Saskatoon right now, in that area, quite a bit of fresh snow, actually. What's it like out in Kelowna?
Still, where I am, I mean, there's no snow at all. But we were up at Big White the other day, and with the granddaughter, and it was nice. It was pleasant. It was beautiful, frosty, new fresh fallen snow on all the trees. It just looked beautiful.
Oh, right on. Yeah, right now driving to work in this morning. Lots of skid steers, busy beavers, kind of all over the place, clearing parking lots and sidewalks and all sorts of stuff right now. So it looks like we got, I don't know, what do you say, Jill? Like, that's probably at least a couple inches?
Yeah, an inch.
An inch and a half, something like that, maybe? Yeah.
And probably with it blowing, it seems like a little bit more in some places.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So more snow is good for our trees when it gets cold, right, Rick?
Absolutely. It's the best thing you could ever have for the plants, especially when the snow blows around and just makes that fresh cover in the places where there's bare ground, and it's perfect for the plants.
Exactly. Well, Happy New Year. Welcome to 2026. Here we go with our next round of shows. What's going on in the Garden Center right now, Jill?
Well, right now the seeds are coming back.
No way.
When the seeds come out, that's when the gardeners come out of their hiding zones too. And it has been a busy week at the store, just getting everything ready, getting prepared. Boxing Day is kind of wound up a little bit, and so people are getting that little bit of a spring bug. And can you believe it? We're 6 weeks away from starting to plant.
6 weeks.
In the greenhouse.
Yes.
So we start things a little bit earlier in the greenhouse than you would in your home. But a lot of people are, January is a planning month, and it's a good time to sort of get into your yard, think about what worked last year, what didn't work, people coming in with their journals and tags falling all over the floor in the garden center because they're just like little tags they've stuck into their journal or taped everywhere. It's like a scrapbooking center.
Well, it's kind of California dreaming, right?
Yeah.
We can't be really out in the yard for to do much, right?
Yep.
I mean, you can shovel till you're blue in the face, you know, that sort of thing, and tidy things up that way. But, you know, in terms of the plants and the trees, we can, though, do some pruning, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you can get out there, and especially if the weather, you know, and we get some warm spells, you can get out there, and nothing that's below minus 20, you don't want to go pruning, but anything that's, you know, if you're in around minus 10, minus 5, that kind of stuff, then if it does warm up for a few days, then you get out there and prune those apple trees or prune those other trees. The only trees you want to leave alone is maples and birches now, because otherwise they will bleed in the spring.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, too. Nobody really wants to be out there pruning when it's below minus 20, freezing yourself, you know, apart. So speaking of pruning, this is a really good segue, actually, because we've got Chad, who's one of our first callers today and the first callers of the year. Good morning, Chad. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. You want to talk about your hedge, right? Give us the lowdown.
Yeah, I have a Cotone Aster hedge that's about 20 years old, and it's got out of control. And I'm wondering if I can cut it back down to the ground in the spring and let it grow back.
Absolutely, but you want to do that in March or the first week of April.
Okay.
Don't wait until it buds all out, okay? So once you get started getting into the middle of April, then it starts getting to be too late.
Okay.
So do it as soon as the snow disappears enough that you can cut them. That's when you want to do it. Do it as soon as possible.
And then how about fertilizer for Chad?
Fertilizer, just if you want to really get it growing, go with starting around May the 10th, go with a 30-10-10 fertilizer that you mix with water. And you're going to be putting, their old plants, you're going to be putting 4 liters of water per plant, okay?
Okay.
And you're going to do that every 3 weeks until July the 15th, and then you're going to stop.
Okay.
And then you got yourself a new hedge again.
Yeah.
And then you'll be already starting to do some pruning on that plant just to get it thickened up by midsummer.
Okay.
Awesome.
That sounds great.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Chad.
Take it easy.
Yeah. 1-877-332-8255. Gotta like calls like that. That's great. Awesome. All right, so we've got seed preparation going on in the garden center we were talking about.
Seed preparation going on. And the other thing that's happening is people are starting to prepare. They're looking online, and we're finding a lot of pictures of AI plants coming into the garden center.
Uh-oh.
And so it's a lot of troubleshooting with my staff and trying to determine, okay, how do you identify something that's AI and something that's not? And then
never thought about that.
And then helping the customer find something similar that actually does exist.
Okay, so you're saying people are seeing pictures of plants.
Pictures of plants, and they might be changed slightly. They might be, the colors might be enhanced. Maybe the size of the plant is enhanced to what it is. Or maybe it's just a variety that doesn't exist. They've combined a Calathea, which is a houseplant, with a hosta. And they said this is a new type of hosta for 2026. And it actually doesn't exist.
So it's sort of fake news in a sort of way,
yeah.
Right? It's, yeah.
Yeah, fake news in a way. But the other thing that I go back to is this is just the same thing as like when the gardening magazines would come out, and most of them would be made in the United States,
so right.
Or
yeah.
in a higher zone. And so it's just getting creative with the customer and saying, okay, you like this rhododendron that maybe isn't as hardy here. So what's something similar we can grow here in
yeah.
Saskatchewan? So there is substitutions.
Right. And not only can you do that in person, but there's lots of physical books you can
yeah.
still buy, right?
Yeah.
And they're produced right here in our province by expert gardeners over the years. So if you're looking for guides or pictures or illustrations or that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
those are some of the ones. I mean, those, you know, if the books are, say, a little bit older, they may not have everything brand new up to date
yeah.
because we do have
so many new varieties.
We do, right? Not just AI varieties, but real varieties.
Real varieties, right? And like the amount of hydrangeas that they're coming out that are hardy, and they have large blooms on them, and they'll bloom earlier and longer, and the petunias that you get the brighter colors on them, and the disease resistancy, or even like we're finding like maybe a late start to spring for our tomato varieties. So we want earlier varieties of tomatoes. So really watch those days on those tomatoes, because there might be a variety like of early girl tomato that is maybe a little bit earlier, that's a hybrid.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? I bet you this isn't the only industry affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
I think it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. So now it's wading through what is.
Think of interior design,
yeah.
even.
Oh, like, yeah, tons of that.
Yeah,
tons of
what's
that.
Real, what's not.
I work in the automotive industry, and you Google what, you know, certain features on a certain car of a certain year.
Mm-hmm.
And if AI can just change it and produce different results, that skews what you're going to find, right?
Yeah.
If we're trying to do research, let's say. Same thing in the plant world, right? We're trying to do research online.
Exactly.
So I guess that's a bit of a just a note for everybody who's listening or in that world is, you know, we got to be careful what we're going to rely on going
yeah.
forward, right?
And do your fact checking, just like anything. The internet is a great source to do some dreaming and brainstorming and getting ideas and inspiring
yeah.
yourself. But then take that information you have and then fact check it back with an expert in your local area.
Yeah, yeah, a
mm-hmm.
credible resource,
mm-hmm.
something you can find like
yeah.
that, for sure. Okay, well, that's definitely an interesting topic. What else are we talking about today, Jill?
Well, I was just perusing on the garden.usask website.
Ooh.
And they got some great checklists on there. One of them that I enjoyed is like month by month checklist of what I should be doing. So in January, you click on it and it tells you, okay, what can you be doing for planning wise? What can you be doing for getting things ready? So lots of different things that you can get going
okay.
there.
We'll talk about that when we get back. So stick around. Lots to come. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back. It's the first Garden Talk of 2026. I'm Jay. We've got Jill in the studio here, and Rick is on the phone in Kelowna with no snow. Lucky guy. Anyways, this is something actually we were talking about on the break, and Rick, you can chime in here too. This is kind of a neat and interesting concept we were kind of going over is the point that, you know, Saskatchewan gardeners really are some of the most resilient and creative in the country. And when you say that out loud, you start to think, what does that really mean? You know? And I think, you know, we are gardeners' challenge for a lot of reasons, right? Right? I mean, what the conditions we face, the seasons we've got is unique, isn't
and
it?
We have to do so much in such a short period of time. So when spring hits, the snow melts and it's like we're full swing spring. And then you garden, and then all of a sudden when fall hits, we're fall, we're
mm-hmm,
winter.
Mm-hmm.
It's we don't have those transition seasons are very unpredictable for us.
And oftentimes very short.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like things can swing very, very quickly. We can melt snow, you know, in 2 weeks we can go from, you know, 4 feet of snow. I'm exaggerating. But a
yeah.
lot of snow, you know, down to basically nothing very yeah. very quickly.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot of the Canadian and Saskatchewan gardeners are one of the most excited gardeners in North America, for sure. You know, you go anywhere down the States and people say, okay, yeah, it's kind of nice to get the garden in to change the plants over. But with our season so short and after the winter we've had, people are just so excited about the garden. It's because I've been in many different locations and garden centers at different times and talked to different garden center owners. And definitely our gardeners in Saskatchewan and Canada just get into gardening in the spring way more because they're just so... They're so fed up with winter and they're so excited about spring.
Definitely.
Now you might remember this a little bit more than I do, but when Opa came over from Holland and started in a new climate in Saskatchewan and everything like that, it probably makes you think of the resilience of gardeners a little bit in Saskatchewan and the challenges that maybe people were faced just trying to discover new land, new soil, new climate. What are some things that Opa talked about?
Oh, yeah, just about, just about how short the season was. When he started out, you didn't have plants in containers, like in pots. So you went out in the fields in the spring and you dug something up and gave it to somebody in a bag of bare roots and to go plant again, right? Or he went and balled a spruce tree up right out in the field. So you didn't have that kind of thing. So your amount of types of plants that you could sell was very limited. And lots of potentillas, lots of cantoniasters, lots of Manchurian elms and ash trees and maple trees and dogwoods and those kind of things. But, you know, it's amazing how things have changed even in my father's lifetime and in my lifetime, how, like Jill, you were talking about earlier, all the different hydrangeas we have now and all the different types of nine barks and spireas and everything else and different types of hostas and daylilies. And it's just amazing how we've tried different plants. And they've adapted because we have actually a lot of microclimates in our yards. And so that makes it so that, you know, and the good snow cover a lot of times we get, it makes it so that we can do a lot of planting and be able to change our landscape so much.
For as much as it's grown, though, you know, like Jill was even saying over the break, you know, the group that you guys are a part of wants everybody to buy the same plants across all of Canada, but it doesn't really work because, you know... We are such a unique kind of place here, the prairies, you know. You can kind of include most of Alberta into that and most of Manitoba, but really where we are, you know, those plants that we plant, especially perennials and stuff, they got to be tough. Like, they got to be able to make it. So we have to choose.
You have to curate a special list that is specific to us here in the prairies. Yes, for
yeah,
sure.
Definitely, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like when fall comes, you can kind of chase our, like we talked about the shorter seasons. I've always said, you know, if you watch, you can kind of chase fall to the west, right? As the leaves fall in Saskatoon and Regina, you can drive to Edmonton and Calgary and it's not quite that much fall yet. And then another week later or 2 weeks later, you can drive through the mountains and it's still only fall starting. And by the time you get to the west coast, you know, like you can kind of chase it westward. Same thing with the east, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, our season is short, and I think, yeah, you're right, though. It does make us want it that much more,
yeah.
I think.
The other thing, Jay, I find interesting is reading about the different zones. And we in Saskatchewan have always been called a 2B to a 3. And they've actually adjusted the zones in the last year. And this year, you're going to see a little bit more in the news about it. But we're in Saskatchewan, moved to now a zone 3. And Rick, I'm not even sure if you knew that specifically.
Three B
now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so where they used to call us a 2 to a 3, now we're a 3B. So it is showing that we are getting a little bit warmer in our climate. Some plants are a little bit more resilient to our climate, and it could be for maybe we're having some more snowfall, so things are lasting a little bit longer. Getting a little bit milder winters. Rick, what other things do you think are playing into that?
Yeah, it's exactly, and you know the and also just the breeding of plants has made some plants just a bit more resilient. And but yeah, no, we have been able to get with the type of snowfalls we get in the wintertime and that kind of stuff, we're able to push the zone limit, and we do that and we've been do that in the garden center for years, where we do our own research, and our research is in people's yards, because it's so much different than growing a plant in the field than growing in someone's yard. It's just two different two different climates, really, completely. So I do my research in people's yards, and we give a full guarantee on the plants. And then with Mike's products, it's up to a five-year guarantee. So we do a test. We'll bring some new plants in, and if we start getting them all back again, then we know, okay, well, that plant's not going to work. Or I actually will do it over 1 year. I'll do it over a couple of years in case we get one really bad winter. And but then that'll tell me what will happen. And we've had more successes than we've had failures.
Absolutely. My aunt and I, dad's sister, we like to flip through the perennial catalogs and like to choose a few varieties of maybe zone four or fives. And then she has a cabin up by Emma Lake. And so we're like, hey, if this can survive up at Emma Lake, then let's see if it lasts the winter. If it does, then maybe let's try it for some of our gardeners here. So
yeah,
it's been an interesting thing to be able to add to our collection just from trial and error on a few things.
Well, and you know, speaking of, you know, how you said microclimates, I remember specifically this fall. So I live in Martinsville, north of Saskatoon, which is a small community. You know, it's a little city, but I'm a block from the edge of my city. So really the wind blows down the street and right out into the field. So it's cold, right? I mean, it's, and I remember this fall, my hostas, they were done, right? Like the frost hit them. That was it. It was over. They were flattened and mush. And drove one Sunday here to you know, downtown Saskatoon, basically, with all the trees and everything. And there were still houses along the river, but the hostas were green. They hadn't gotten that hit, right? So yeah, it is those little microclimates that kind of get formed. Which is fascinating to see that there are things like you're talking about that creep up the zone chart a little bit that you can pull off in certain cases. It doesn't mean everywhere, but it means, you know, some people can make it happen.
I was at some breeding trials down in the States a few years back, and I was talking to one of the breeders, and they were breeding that geranium, which we know up in Canada quite well, and they set the zone on it to be a 4 to a 5. And I was like, well, no, like that actually is hardy. Where we live, we actually carry that plant. He's like, no way, you carry that all the way up in Saskatchewan? And he couldn't believe it. So even though they've labeled it as zone 4 or 5, that's the only climate it's been tested in. So that's what they've labeled it as. But yet we have carried it, and I can say, hey, no, actually that's probably more of a zone 2 to 3 plant. But it's on the tag, it still says 4 to 5.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
So it is interesting because not everything's been tested yet, right?
Yeah. And it goes the opposite way, too. I mean, sometimes they put, you know, zone 3, but it's not a zone 3. So
absolutely.
You do have to do a little bit of research, and because, you know what, we talked about before. I mean, even, you know, to even buy your plants, if you're trying to, as a group, we're trying to buy, as our garden center group, we're trying to buy plants together to get a better deal on them. And the chain stores do that a lot, too.
Yeah.
And so, but it's really tough, even for the chain stores, to say, okay, if I'm going to buy a whole bunch of emerald cedars, and we're going to ship them to every store across Canada. Well, that doesn't really work because emerald cedars don't do as well here in Saskatchewan. Right,
right? Exactly,
And so you have to, rather an emerald cedar, you're going to do a Holmstrup or, you know, skybound cedar.
Right.
And so you have to really do a little bit of research when you see your plants and then make sure you get the right variety.
I'm going to jump in right here. We're going to go to our break. We're going to get back, when we come back after the break, talking about, okay, so what are some of the things that we can do or shouldn't do throughout the winter, you know, to ensure some success with some of these plants. So let's get back with that. Perfect. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Thanks for spending Sunday here with us. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. Jill's in the studio, but Rick is on the phone with us from Kelowna right now. We were talking earlier before the break just about, you know, the unique challenges of where we garden, where we live, and the climate and that sort of stuff. What we wanted to move into a little bit is talking about maybe some things to avoid doing throughout the winter season to maximize your success coming up in the spring and throughout this summer. I know, Rick, you want to touch a little bit about animals are a bit of an issue during the winter, right?
Oh, yeah. Yesterday, right on their back deck, there was 26 mountain sheep.
This is Kelowna.
and they were grazing, and they were eating everything in the yard. In fact, there's one astaliate weeping Norway spruce that's about 4 feet tall, and this ram with a bunch of other little sheep all around it. But the ram was actually using it to rub its horns on and try to push it right over.
Oh, gee.
That's when I said, okay, that's enough, and I went outside and chased them off.
Yeah, no kidding, when they're breaking the plants.
But, But they're eating. There's a bunch of branches from the upright junipers here laying on the ground because they came through. And yeah, no, it's, and you're gonna watch that in Saskatchewan. We have, you know, here we have some sheep and there's deer around and that kind of stuff. Same in Saskatchewan. And I mean, with all the snow, the food's getting a little bit scarce, so now they start moving in, and rabbits will start, even in the cities, you'll see rabbits starting to chew on the plants, and so you want to watch for that, especially if you might have to put a little wrapping around the plants.
Oh, yeah, okay, yep.
So that's what I was going to ask next, is if people are noticing that those animals are moving in, what are some precautions that we can take?
Yeah, putting a tree guard around the trunk of the tree, especially if you got younger apple trees or flowering crabs or, you know, plum trees, those kind of things. Even if you got some mugel pines or some pine trees or some cedars, even just getting a piece of snow fence or something like that and putting them around it to keep the animals away from them. So if you live out in the country, you got to watch for porcupine tracks because they can do a lot of damage. And so you might have to wrap some trees to keep them away from that because they'll eat a 30-foot spruce tree. They'll eat all the bark right off of it if you get one that makes its home around your place.
Oh, boy, wow.
And so you do a lot of damage. So, and, of course, the deer and even in some places, even around a lot of places in Saskatchewan, the moose and the elk are becoming more prevalent, too. And so they do a lot of damage if they get into your yard as well. So, and so you might have to put some temporary mesh fencing around your plants or anything like that just to keep them from chewing on the plants.
Is there anything you can do to, like, chase animals away? I don't mean disturb them or harm them. I just mean, like, is there anything you can do as a scarecrow kind of thing? I know in the summer we've got those sprinklers we can use to kind of, do that, or there's like critter ritter and some scent things we can do. But what can you do in the winter when we've got, you know, no water and it's cold outside? Is there anything?
Yeah, you can. There's some different things you can do. Like I used to have a mule deer buck that used to come and rub on my ash trees all the time, and so I took some Ivory Spring soap. And I took the bars of soap and I rubbed it on the bark, you know, and that kept them away because they didn't want to get that smell of the Ivory Spring onto their antlers, right? So that worked really well for keeping them off there. So
okay.
You have to do it in preparation for it, right? And you can even take some shavings and put them into some little nylon stockings and hang them out there as well. And sometimes even hair clippings from your barber shop, and that will help to hang those around too, because they don't like this. When they think that there's people around, they don't want to be around there that much, okay? So, but otherwise, like my yard, I have so many plants, I actually had to put it's a plastic 7-foot-high temporary fence I put up around my yard for the wintertime, and then I take it down in the spring. And so there's different things you might have to do depending on where you are and how many have, what you have. I mean, in the cities, you got a lot of jackrabbits now, and so those things will eat your cedars to nothing, your junipers to nothing, and they'll go after some of your other plants as well in the yard, especially if you got things like Saskatoons or cherries and those kind of things. The bark is sweet, so they love them. So you may have to put a little temporary little mesh fencing around them just to keep them out.
Now, what about voles? I know that we had trouble with little voles eating the bottoms up of some of our fruit trees at the garden center. What could people do right now if they're noticing some issues with that?
Well, it's going to be hard to tell right now because the voles work underneath the snow.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see them, right? That's why you see those tunnels when the snow melts in the spring. So, but if you think you may have some vole issues, especially if you live in an area where you're up against a park or something like that, where they can come in, there's some natural areas, then what you can do is you can actually dig down to the base of where your fruit trees are and put those tree guards around your plants. Now, if it's a shrub, it's harder to do that. So what they can do then is you can dig down to the base, and then what you can do is you can put a little shelter, a little box or something like that, and put some of those mouse, just wooden mouse traps again with some peanut butter and a craisin or raisin on top of them, and then cover them back over again and with snow, but you left a shelter where they can be underneath and close to those plants, and then they'll go after that peanut butter and craisin before they will the plants, and it'll catch them in those snap traps.
Gotcha. Okay, let's take a pause on this. We're going to go to a text, and then we'll come back to what to do, what not to do, kind of throughout the winter sort of thing. This is a text on 1-877-332-8255 from Lori, who's in Saskatoon. Lori says, I've been keeping my four amaryllis for a few years now. In the summer, they stay in my greenhouse. In the fall, I cut them down and put them in the dark, cool garage for about 6 weeks. Then I bring them in, water them at the beginning of November. Only some bloom. What else do I need to do? What kind of fertilizer do I need, and when do I fertilize it? Each one has sent out a new plant on its side.
Yeah. So if they're setting out new plants, a lot of the energy is going into the new one to reproduce. So you might get some years where it needs to take a break. But in the summer season, when it's growing and getting those active leaves, it's important that it does grow in your greenhouse that way. And I would just use something like bone meal, just a mild fertilizer, like bone meal, put it into the soil, water it well, or even alfalfa pellets, get some energy back into that bulb. You're doing everything right. You're just going to have some years where it just might need to take a longer break, just because it's getting to be an older bulb. Mm-hmm. There's more energy being expended of it every year, especially if it's starting to multiply too. So, I find like when you have a crop, you're not guaranteed that 100% of that crop is going to work every year. You
right.
might get 60 to 80% of that crop going. So if out of four bulbs, you're getting two that rebloom every year, and it might go in a rotation through that way. So, I think you're doing everything right there. It sounds like,
well, I mean,
the only thing that maybe I would suggest is in the growing season when it has in the greenhouse, give it a little bit more fertilizer just to keep it some more nutrients going back into that bulb. And then once you cut it back, let it go dormant and continue the process.
I'd say it's pretty impressive because a lot of amaryllis bulbs we treat as sort of one-time use things, mm-hmm. right? The wax-covered ones.
The wax-covered like ones, yeah. Especially, yeah.
But to keep it going every year for three or four years now, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah, and the bulb will get bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And usually the bigger the bulb, the more flower spikes you'll get on it as well, too.
Right. Okay. 1-877-332-8255. So is there anything else that we shouldn't be touching or doing during the winter season?
One thing that I see a lot of is wrapping cedars or wrapping junipers or evergreens, and the right way and the wrong way to wrap your plants. And I've seen a lot of it where they're wrapped tight right down to the bottom and wrapped almost tight like a jacket. And maybe, Rick, do you want to talk a little bit on the purpose of wrapping your plants and kind of why it is what we can do to sort of do this properly? Because wrapping them tight and all the way to the bottom is not actually helping the plant at all, is it?
Well, a lot of people think that we're wrapping the plants to protect them from minus 40, but we're not really trying to do that. And the plants can adapt all that, but what they're trying to wrap them from is from the sun, and mainly in March and the first week in April when the ground's still frozen, but the sun is getting warmer and higher in the sky, or even a Chinook that comes through in the middle of wintertime. And so, but mainly is that when the sun is getting higher up in the sky and warmer, the sun reflects off the sun and burns and desiccates your cedars and junipers. And so, but by putting that burlap right to the ground, what happens is that leaves a bare spot right around the trunk of the tree where that cold minus 40 weather can go right to the ground and into the roots and damage the roots. So that's why you want to leave your burlap 6 inches off the ground at least. And so that the snow can get and protect the ground underneath the plant, and then you'll be fine then. And then you want to use a burlap also that has loose weaves in it, so that you can almost see through it, and because you're just trying to shade it, but you're letting the heat escape so that you're not building up a heat spot inside that burlap sacking.
And I've also seen like a new way of doing it is where people will take three stakes and they'll almost stake around their cedars, and put the stakes in the fall, but they actually won't put the burlap on until maybe, January, February, so that the plant can get lots of snowfall coming in, but you're actually just creating a screen around it. You're not actually wrapping the plant. You're just actually Yeah. putting it up as a screen covering like the south and the west exposure.
Yeah, exactly. Like putting those things up and then making sure that at the beginning of March sometime, and then you're putting the burlap up around them, and then that just protects them, and it really makes a big difference. And I even talked about people in the fall, you know, putting, if you especially live in the country and you got a whole bunch of little spruce trees you just planted, putting a couple pails of dirt in the shop, and then so it doesn't freeze up. And then what you can do is during, especially during March, and that sprinkle some of that dirt on top of the snow. So you're making that snow a little bit dark colored. You don't have to put very much on, and because every time it get a fresh snow, you can throw some more on, and then that way it stops that reflection from burning the tips of all those little spruce trees that turn purple or brown in the spring because of the reflection.
All right, we're going to take a last break here. When we get back, it's the season of setting, you know, New Year's resolutions and goals. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about what, you know, gardening resolutions you can work towards coming up in this next segment. Stick around. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Happy Sunday. Welcome back to Garden Talk. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. It's the time for New Year's resolutions. I stepped on the scale this morning. I think I have a few pounds to lose. Not too many, but a few.
Great.
Oh, thanks. That's nice of you to say, but I ate my face off this past couple of weeks.
That's what Christmas is for.
It is. So back onto the treadmill. That's one resolution, right? That sort of thing. But let's talk about gardening resolutions, because that's definitely a thing that people work towards, is doing things better or changes. And I think, you know, that there's a lot of pressure. It can be from outside sources, it can be from within your own mind, but it's hard to remember sometimes that gardening is like an imperfect hobby.
It's trial and error.
Yeah,
a lot.
Right. And there are people who are who you could look at and go, wow, that's an amazing gardener. Look at their place, and it's incredible. And they still have failures because they're just plants, right? They still fail from time to time for no reason, right?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that you have to kind of keep in mind, that you can try your hardest, but not everything is going to be a total success. So don't give yourself, you know, too much grief if it doesn't turn out. But
absolutely,
what we want to talk about is some gardening resolutions that actually work. So where do we go with that?
Well, gardening resolutions that actually work. So one thing is planning for your space. So
right.
That's a really important resolution. Okay, this year I'm going to plan for my space so that I know what I'm going to buy ahead of time. I know some people stop into the garden center and they are very overwhelmed in March because they started their seed starting back in January, and they have all of a sudden their kitchen is full of tomatoes and peppers, and they're like, what am I going to do with this? So I know a lot of resolutions. Kate, you know what? Let's do this smarter this time. You know, I'm going to maybe grow a little bit less, but be a little bit more intentional.
That's a good one. Or like choosing a plant that fits your lifestyle a bit better.
Yeah.
Not necessarily what the trends are. I'll give you an example. We call it a resolution, but we discovered in our backyard like that the, as much as we liked having, you know, in the corner of our deck, a little table with a bunch of small little pots that looked really good. We loved it. They just absolutely fried. Like you couldn't keep up with the watering because there's such a small amount of soil in every pot.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of, you know, as much as we loved the way it looked, it just didn't work, you know, with that space. So we had to sort of resolve the fact that we had to use big planters, big containers, so that we could water them once a day and the plants would actually survive.
Well, same with me. In my yard, I have four busy kids and we're back and forth to the cabin and with the store. I was like, hey, I want my yard to look like everything does at the garden center, but with not being at the house very often, it was really difficult.
Yeah, all right.
So I resolved that by having my brother come and help me, and we put drip lines on everything.
Oh, yeah. Yep, for sure.
And now my plants, no matter what, are just gorgeous. So, I mean, that's an easy one, an easy fixable thing that you can be like, hey, I did this and now we have a solution.
Yeah, totally.
So,
totally.
Rick, what are you doing in your yard this year? What's the one thing you're going to add to your yard this year?
Well, it looks like my wife wants me to build some a stream with some waterfalls. And so that's what I've been gathering some rocks last fall already and sort of been watching lots of little YouTube videos and videos of different types of waterfalls and how to arrange the rocks to make a nice little, and using lights and those kind of things. And so, that's something that I'm going to be working on. I got a sort of a hillside where I can make to use a good backdrop to make this work. And then I've worked with ponds before, so I got the filter part, I think, figured out pretty good because I got to keep that water clean. And so then I got that part. It's just a matter of making sure that I get the waterfalls and making sure my liners are good enough that they can that can keep the water in for years to come.
But I can't wait, because last year's project that Mom put you on was the outdoor shower tree, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
That was kind of last year's project. So Dad found this big old tree at the farm, and they cut it down, and he like hollowed out one side and put piping into it and hung plumbing from it. So now we have this beautiful tree that's an outdoor shower, and my mom's got drip lines to it so she can hang plants off of it.
Oh my gosh.
It's quite the thing, Jay. You're going to have to come out and see it.
I do. But let's be honest though, Rick, you're blaming this on Kim, but really she just said, yeah, break out the backhoe and the heavy equipment. Rick's in like a dirty shirt. Like, okay, let's do some land. Landscaping.
Yeah.
Let's drive some equipment and haul some rocks, and he's in.
Move things
dig
around.
Some holes. Yeah,
it's a challenge, right?
So. Yeah, it's a challenge, but you love it. Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, we're just about out of time here. Sue is in Eagle Lake. Sue, hang on the line. We're going to answer your call as soon as we get off the air. So sorry we didn't get it on the air there. We'll talk about your Venus flytrap with you in a second here. But otherwise, we pretty much got a one run. We're kind of out of time here. So if you're looking at that gardening resolution, something you want to strive towards, you know, sky's the limit. Just don't put too much pressure on yourself, right?
No,
bottom
don't.
Line.
Don't. We're resilient here in Saskatchewan.
Exactly.
Let's just be easy.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next weekend on Garden Talk. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You've been listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.